Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 6, Nirvana and the All-Negating Absolute. This is Part 3. It's on pages 538 through 541. The great voice of Savitri's higher self told her that she must draw back from the world that she has made for herself. The world she made comes from her ideas, from her thoughts, and from her sense impressions. Now she must come out of that. She has to be one with the world. She has to contain all suffering things in her heart's space and bear the grief and joy of all that lives. This way, she will fulfill her destiny and save man from his ignorance. The voice gave her this advice. Adventure all to make the whole world thine. To break into greater kingdoms, turn thy force. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all. Ascend to the emptiness of the Supreme, that all in thee may reach its absolute. Banish all thought from thee, and be God's void. Consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve time's work. Cast off thy mind. Step back from form and name. Annul thyself, that only God may be. When Savitri heard the voice of her higher self, she was ready to follow its advice. She knows that she has to do yoga to prepare herself to conquer death. But there is another need that she has. People do yoga practice because there is something inside them that needs to make spiritual progress. We are all part of universal evolution. The universe evolves always towards higher consciousness. For some people, it's more important than for others. It depends on each person's degree of development. When somebody's soul is more active, they have a greater interest in doing yoga. There are some people who have reached the point where it is the most important thing in their life. The outer life does not hold much attraction for them any longer. They want the light, and they want everything to be better all over the world. So they adventure into the inner life of the spirit. They are drawn to work on themselves, to have greater consciousness and love and wisdom, to become better and better in every way, all the time. People like this are developed enough to know how much this helps everything. Sri Aurobindo has written a beautiful sonnet that tells the whole story. He calls it The Ways of the Spirit. He wrote two poems called The Ways of the Spirit. This is the first one. It shows us what we will receive through yoga practice. Here it is. The Ways of the Spirit. 1. What points ascending nature to her goal? 'Tis not man's lame transcribing intellect, with its carved figures rigid and erect, but the far subtle vision of his soul. His instruments have served his weakness well, but they must change to tread the paths of fire that lead through his calm self immeasurable to the last rapture's incandescent spire. The Spirit keeps for him its ample ways, a sense that takes the world into our being, a close illumined touch and intimate seeing, wide thought that is a God's ensphering gaze, a tranquil heart in sympathy with all, a will wide-winging, armed, imperial. This is for all of us to achieve. Savitri will need to have these ways of the spirit to conquer death. She needs to have a close illumined touch and intimate seeing and a wide thought that can hold all. She needs to have a tranquil heart that can feel sympathy with all, and a very strong, enduring will. We have seen that her higher self told her that she has to take the whole world into her being. Savitri has been told to quiet her mind. "Cast off thy mind," the voice said. "Step back from form and name." A quiet mind is one of the goals of every system of yoga. But it is not a dead mind. It is when we have a mind that is completely capable of controlling our thoughts, instead of our being controlled by them. Sri Aurobindo wrote in a letter, "To reject doubts means control of one's thoughts, very certainly so. But control of one's thoughts is as necessary as the control of one's desires and passions, or the control of the movements of one's body. For the yoga, and not for the yoga only. One cannot be a fully developed mental being even, if one has not control of the thoughts. One has to be their observer, their judge, master, the mental Purusha. And Purusha means the eternal witness. Sri Aurobindo then uses some Sanskrit terms. He writes, "Manomaya Purusha, Sakshi, Anumanta, Ishvara." Here are Sri Aurobindo's own definitions of these Sanskrit words. Manomaya Purusha is the soul on the mental level. The Purusha, the eternal witness, as a mental being, in whose nature the clarity and luminous power of the mind acts in its own right, independent of any limitation or oppression by the vital or corporeal instruments. Sakshi simply means witness. Anumanta means the one who gives approval or sanction. Ishvara is the supreme being who, by his conscious power, manifests himself in time and governs the universe. So, Sri Aurobindo is telling us that this is the highest reality of our mind. The Sanskrit says, "This mind is the power and consciousness of the Supreme Lord that observes all and approves of all. This acts as our comprehension and our thought processes." So we can see that we're not supposed to just disregard our mind or reject it and throw it away as something useless or harmful. It has to function in its true capacity as the Manomaya Purusha. Our mind has its own rightful place in the integral functioning of a fully conscious being. And this is one of the goals of Sri Aurobindo's integral yoga. But even if we're not doing yoga, our mind should work properly. We should be open to the right things, and we should think clearly. In one of the agenda conversations, Sat Prem asks Mother about abolishing the mind completely. First he asks, "But the abolition of the mind, isn't it the same thing as the complete tranquility of the mind?" Mother says, "No." Then Sat Prem asks, "What can be done to abolish the mind?" Mother answers, "No, I don't think it should be done. I think what's necessary is this absolute tranquility so the Supreme Consciousness may go through without being distorted." In his letter on the control of thoughts, Sri Aurobindo goes on to say, "It is no more proper for the mental being to be a tennis ball of unruly and uncontrollable thoughts than to be a rudderless ship in a storm of desires and passions, or a slave of either the inertia or the impulses of the body." In other words, he's telling us that the yogi is a master of the mental movements. And then he says, he not only is a master there, but even while in mind, in a way, he gets out of it, as it were, and stands above, or quite back from it, and free. For him, the image of the factory of thoughts is no longer quite valid, for he sees that thoughts come from outside, from the universal mind, or universal nature, sometimes formed and distinct, sometimes unformed, and then they are given shape somewhere in us. The principal business of our mind is either a response of acceptance or refusal to these thought waves, or this giving a personal mental form to thought stuff from the environing nature force. Here is how Sri Aurobindo himself achieved a quiet mind. He told this story. A yogi named Bhaskar Lele told me, "Sit in meditation, but do not think. Look only at your mind. You will see thoughts coming into it. Before they can enter, throw them away from you till your mind is capable of entire silence." Sri Aurobindo describes what happened to him like this. "I had never heard before of thoughts coming visibly into the mind from outside, but I did not think of either questioning the truth or the possibility. I simply sat down and did it. In a moment, my mind became silent as a windless air on a high mountain summit. And then I saw a thought, and then another, coming in a concrete way from outside. I flung them away before they could enter and take hold of the brain, and in 3 days I was free. From that moment, in principle, the mental being in me became a free intelligence, a universal mind, not limited to the narrow circle of personal thought or a laborer in a thought factory, but a receiver of knowledge from all the 100 realms of being, and free to choose what it willed in this vast sight empire and thought empire." However, Sri Aurobindo says, this took some time to come to completeness. He says, "The later, fullest development of this new untrammeled mental power took time, many years. But a progressive freedom and mastery over one's mind is perfectly within the possibilities of anyone who has the faith and the will to undertake it." Sri Aurobindo gave Mother a quiet mind. Mother tells the story in the agenda. It was when she first met Sri Aurobindo in March of 1914. She said, "I had tried to get complete mental silence. When you have it, anything can pass through your head without causing the least ripple. But I never succeeded. I had tried, but couldn't do it. I could be silent when I wanted to, but as soon as I stopped thinking solely of that, stopped wanting only that, the invasion of thoughts resumed, and the work had to be done all over again." That's all I told him, not in great detail, in a few words. Then I sat down near him, and he began talking with Richard. I didn't listen. I was simply beside him on the floor. He was sitting in a chair with Richard facing him across a table, and they were talking. I was sitting there, not listening. I don't know how long they went on, but all at once, I felt a great force come into me. A peace, a silence, something massive. It came. "Did this?" And Mother makes a gesture of sweeping her hand across her forehead to show it was cleaned out. "Then it descended and stopped here," and Mother points at the chest. Later, Mother specified, it encompassed the 3 active mental centers, the forehead, between the eyebrows, and the throat. Then Mother goes on with Sat Prem, saying, "When they finished talking, I got up and left. And then I noticed that not a thought remained. I no longer knew anything or understood anything. I was absolutely blank. So I gave thanks to the Lord and thanked Sri Aurobindo in my heart. And I was very careful not to disturb it. I held it like that for I don't know how long, 8 or 10 days. Nothing, not one idea, not one thought, nothing. A complete blank. In other words, from the outside, it must have looked like total idiocy. But I was living in my inner joy, nothing stirring. I spoke as little as possible, and it was like something mechanical. It wasn't me. Then, slowly, slowly, as if falling drop by drop, something was built up again. But it had no limits. It was vast as the universe, and wonderfully still and luminous. Nothing here, in the head, but there, above the head. And then everything began to be seen from there. And it has never left me. You know, as a proof of Sri Aurobindo's power, it's incomparable. And it was he who did it, entirely. I didn't even ask him." It sounds like Mother is describing what Sri Aurobindo has already described about the proper functioning of the mind. A truly quiet mind becomes our conscious instrument of the Supreme. Mother spoke about one thing that we can do with our mind. She said, "This process is the true use of thought. Thought is used as a channel to carry vibrations of divine grace from place to place." She was speaking about the wish to take away pain and suffering. She said, "There is something in love, in its origin, that is constantly expressed by the intervention of the grace, a force, a sweetness, something like a vibration of solace spread everywhere, but which an enlightened consciousness can direct, concentrate on certain points. And that's just where I saw the true use one could make of thought. Thought is used as a channel to carry the vibration from place to place wherever it's necessary. This force, this vibration of sweetness, is there over the world in a static way, pressing to be received. But it's an impersonal action. And thought, enlightened thought, surrendered thought, the thought that is nothing more than an instrument, that no longer tries to set things in motion, that is satisfied with being moved by the higher consciousness, thought is used as an instrument to make contact, to build a connection, and allow this impersonal force to act wherever it's necessary on precise points. Now Savitri is going to discover her own mind and thoughts in a new way. She is going to see where her thoughts come from. She is also going to see a lot of different kinds of thoughts that she did not realize she had, because she never looked at her thoughts in this way before. To begin this part of Canto 6, Sri Aurobindo writes, "Thus spoke the mighty and uplifting voice, and Savitri heard. She bowed her head and mused, plunging her deep regard into herself, in her soul's privacy, in the silent night." Then Sri Aurobindo tells us one particular method to quiet the mind when he describes Savitri's experience in meditation. He writes, "Aloof and standing back, detached and calm, a witness of the drama of herself, a student of her own interior scene. She watched the passion and the toil of life, and heard, in the crowded thoroughfares of mind, the unceasing tread and passage of her thoughts. All she allowed to rise that chose to stir, calling, compelling naught, forbidding naught, she left all to the process formed in time and the free initiative of nature's will. This is the method of simply observing one's thoughts until the whole process slows down and finally stops, and the mind is empty and quiet. We will see that Sri Aurobindo writes this to allow him to show us every kind of thought we have. In this way, he shows us because Savitri has to see each one. He also shows us where they come from, and in this way, he shows us why we have them. There are two main sources of our thoughts. One is inside our physical body and our subtle body. The other main source of thought is the universal mental planes outside our body and mind. These thoughts enter us through our subtle body. In one of his letters, Sri Aurobindo writes about the thoughts from outside. Our thoughts are not really created within ourselves independently in the small, narrow thinking machine we call our mind. In fact, they come to us from a vast mental space or ether, either as mind waves or waves of mind force that carry a significance which takes shape in our personal mind, or as thought formations ready-made, which we adopt and call our own. Our outer mind is blind to this process of nature, but by the awakening of the inner mind, we can become aware of it. As Savitri sits, observing the drama of her inner self, following the complex human play, she sees the powers that move us from behind the scenes and the divine program for it all. Sri Aurobindo writes that she sees everything that comes up out of man's depths, but she has been told to quiet her mind. So he writes, but most of all, her gaze pursued the birth of thought. Savitri goes straight to the source. Then Sri Aurobindo compares the surface mind with a factory. The head office of the brain issues forms, and the inner factory of thought sounds and soundless words and stored voices makes the symbolic ideas that we believe in and that we use for communication. He says that Savitri does not pause to look at this surface functioning. Then he tells us what is really going on. He writes, in our unseen subtle body, thought is born, or there it enters from the cosmic field. First, Sri Aurobindo tells us about thoughts coming from our subtle body, from the deepest, most subtle, first of all. In a few lines of poetry, he uses words that bring us each thought experience. As Savitri looks for the origins of her thought, she sees thoughts coming from her soul, naked thoughts that are luminous thoughts with mysteried lips and wonderful eyes. Then she sees vibrant thoughts coming from her heart, burning faces looking for life and love and passionate truth. Sri Aurobindo says, a thaumaturgist sat in her heart's deep. A thaumaturgist is a miracle worker, and this one, in the heart, brings our life movements forward and brings our look upwards to higher things until we are changed by hope and wonder. Savitri's seeing will is seen in the Ajna chakra, her third eye center. She sees higher thoughts, which look like angels, standing behind her brain, pouring the light of heaven into the physical form. Beautiful imaginations of joy and delight and miracle come from her breast. From her navel center come in sensations and unformed ideas. They rise to her throat center to become speech. In the lower centers, she sees wordless desires forming, and she sees how longings express themselves with a cry. Finally, Sri Aurobindo writes that her body's thoughts climbed from her conscious limbs and carried their yearnings to its mystic crown. This is the thousand-petaled lotus. This is the place where we are open to the higher planes above us. This is where nature joins the higher forces on the higher planes. So all this is happening in us all the time. But we're not consciously aware of it because we're not conscious in our inner mind. But our soul sees it all. Sri Aurobindo tells us this. He writes, "But for the mortal prisoned in outward mind, all must present their passports at its door. Disguised, they must don the official cap and mask, or pass as manufacturers of the brain. Unknown their secret truth and hidden source. Only to the inner mind they speak direct, put on a body, assume a voice, their passage seen, their message heard and known, their birthplace and natal mark revealed, and stand confessed to an immortal sight, our nature's messengers to the witness soul." Then Savitri sees what happens in the subtle inner chambers of her body, which Sri Aurobindo calls the spirit's house. Savitri sees larger thoughts that come through unseen doors into the little frontal room of her mind, thoughts that enlarge her limited human range and lift her ideals and open her to infinite things. Then Sri Aurobindo writes a marvelous thing. A sight opened on the invisible and sensed the shapes that mortal eyes see not, the sounds that mortal listening cannot hear, the blissful sweetness of the intangible's touch. The beings of the subtle realms appeared, and scenes concealed behind our earthly scene. She saw the life of remote continents, and distance deafened not to voices far. She felt the movements crossing unknown minds. The past's events occurred before her eyes. The great world's thoughts were part of her own thought. The feelings dumb and forever unshared. The ideas that never found an utterance. Sri Aurobindo shows us here how all of this can be done once we are no longer prisoned in our outward mind. These are some of the things that come to our mind when we are what he has already described as a free intelligence and a receiver of knowledge from all the realms of being, free to choose as we will. Savitri now understands the subconscious communications that affect her body, mind, and vital. Sri Aurobindo writes, "The unseen grew visible and audible. Thoughts leap down from a superconscient field, like eagles swooping from a viewless peak. Thoughts gleamed up from the screened subliminal depths, like golden fishes from a hidden sea. This world is a vast unbroken totality. A deep solidarity joins its contrary powers. God's summits look back on the mute abyss. So man, evolving to divinest heights, colloquies still with the animal and the jinn. The human godhead, with stargazer eyes, lives still in one house with the primal beast. The high meets the low, all is a single plan. The Book of Yoga, Nirvana, and the All-Negating Absolute. Thus spoke the mighty and uplifting voice, and Savitri heard. She bowed her head and mused, plunging her deep regard into herself, in her soul's privacy, in the silent night. Aloof, and standing back detached and calm, a witness of the drama of herself, a student of her own interior scene, she watched the passion and the toil of life, and heard, in the crowded thoroughfares of mind, the unceasing tread and passage of her thoughts. All she allowed to rise that chose to stir, calling, compelling not, forbidding not, she left all to the process formed in time and the free initiative of nature's will. Thus following the complex human play, she heard the prompter's voice behind the scenes, perceived the original libretto set and the organ theme of the composer force. All she beheld that surges from man's depths, the animal instincts prowling midlife's trees, the impulses that whisper to the heart, and passion's thunder chase sweeping the nerves. She saw the powers that stare from the abyss, and the wordless light that liberates the soul. But most, her gaze pursued the birth of thought. Affranchised from the look of surface mind, she paused not to survey the official case, the issue of forms from the office of the brain, its factory of thought sounds, and soundless words and voices stored within, unheard by men. Its mint and treasury of shining coin. These were but counters in mind's symbol game. A gramophone's discs, a reproduction's film, a list of signs, a cipher and a code. In our unseen subtle body, thought is born, or there it enters from the cosmic field. Oft from her soul stepped out a naked thought, luminous with mysteried lips and wonderful eyes. Or from her heart emerged some burning face and looked for life and love and passionate truth. Aspired to heaven, or embraced the world, or led the fancy like a fleeting moon across the dull sky of man's common days, amidst the doubtful certitudes of earth's lore, to the celestial beauty of faith gave form, as if at flower prints in a dingy room laughed in a golden vase one living rose. A thaumaturgist sat in her heart's deep, compelled the forward stride, the upward look, till wonder leaped into the illumined breast, and life grew marvelous with transfiguring hope. A seeing will pondered between the brows. Thoughts, glistening angels, stood behind the brain in flashing armor, folding hands of prayer, and poured heaven's rays into the earthly form. Imaginations flamed up from her breast, unearthly beauty, touches of surpassing joy, and plans of miracle, dreams of delight. Around her navel lotus, clustering close, her large sensations of the teeming worlds streamed their dumb movements of the unformed idea. Invading the small, sensitive flower of the throat, they brought their mute, unuttered resonances to kindle the figures of a heavenly speech. Below, desires formed their wordless wish, and longings of physical sweetness and ecstasy translated into the accents of a cry, their grasp on objects, and their clasp on souls. Her body's thoughts climbed from her conscious limbs and carried their yearnings to its mystic crown, where nature's murmurs meet the ineffable. But for the mortal prisoned in the outward mind, all must present their passports at its door. Disguised, they must don the official cap and mask, or pass as manufactures of the brain, unknown their secret truth and hidden source. Only to the inner mind they speak direct, put on a body, and assume a voice. Their passage seen, their message heard and known, their birthplace and their natal mark revealed, and stand confessed to an immortal sight, our nature's messengers to the witness soul. Impenetrable, withheld from mortal sense, the inner chambers of the spirit's house disclose to her their happenings and their guests. Eyes looked through crevices in the invisible wall, and through the secrecy of unseen doors, there came into mind's little frontal room thoughts that enlarged our limited human range, lifted the ideal's half-quenched or sinking torch, or peered through the finite at the infinite. A sight opened upon the invisible, and sensed the shapes that mortal eyes see not, the sounds that mortal listening cannot hear, the blissful sweetness of the intangible's touch. The objects that to us are empty air are there the stuff of daily experience and the common pabulum of sense and thought. The beings of the subtle realms appeared, and scenes concealed behind our earthly scene. She saw the life of remote continents, and distance deafened not to voices far. She felt the movements crossing unknown minds. The past events occurred before her eyes. The great world's thoughts were part of her own thought, the feelings dumb forever and unshared, the ideas that never found an utterance. The dim subconscious incoherent hints laid bare a meaning twisted, deep, and strange, the bizarre secret of their fumbling speech, their links with underlying reality. The unseen grew visible and audible. Thoughts leaped down from a superconscient field, like eagles swooping from a viewless peak. Thoughts gleamed up from the screened subliminal depths, like golden fishes from a hidden sea. This world is a vast unbroken totality. A deep solidarity joins its contrary powers. God's summits look back on the mute abyss. So man, evolving to divinest heights, colloquies still with the animal and the jinn. The human godhead with stargazer eyes lives still in one house with the primal beast. The high meets the low. All is a single plan.